Welcome everybody to the Parsha class for Beha'alosecha 5770. We have someone new today, so let me give a brief overview. This year, our theme, and we always have a theme, is prayer. In the early part of the year, we had used a sefer called Sha'arim B'Tfilah, Gates of Prayer, written by contemporary scholar Rabbi Pinchas of blessed memory. After Pesach, I was inspired to go on a detour with y'all, a detour to discover a greater meaning of emunah, faith and belief in God. We took a six-week detour on that topic, and we prepared for Shavuos to receive the Torah. After Shavuos, I told you that we had to go back to tefillah, we had to go back to prayer. But I wasn't sure of the way back. There were no breadcrumbs. By the way, please, generally what we like to do is to, everyone has questions and I want to hear them. The last part of the class is usually for questions and answers. And we do discuss significantly then. So I said I found a way back, I thought. Because I had discovered a book, Pathways, by Rabbi Shlomo Wolbe. Pathways is a translation for a book in Hebrew, Or Lashav, or Light to the Return, for the returnee. And Rabbi Wolbe, who was the prime student of Rabbi Lvovitz in Poland, and the greatest Musar teacher in our generation, and he's also passed away, he took off of his high-level teaching to write a short but very powerful book for those who were returning to Judaism for the first time. And when I opened up Rabbi Wolbe's book, or the translation of it, I saw that he was leading us from faith back to prayer. Exactly. In three easy lessons. Because the contents of his book are three sections: Pathways to Faith, then Mitzvos, Commandments, then Avodah, divine worship. So last week was our, we're having a three-part series on returning back to prayer from faith. It's like, and I just discovered this last week. It was, he wrote the script for us. Now, after the end of today, we are going to be left with a very mysterious puzzle. We're going to be on pins and needles until next week. And I'll tell you what that puzzle is as we proceed. All right. Last week, as I mentioned, we studied Pathways to Faith. Rabbi Wolbe writes five different subsections. We learned about discovering God through his universe, which is a concept we learned in our detour, about Bechina, reflection on creation, as the primary source for faith in God. One does not have to be a philosopher. One does not have to be a scientist. They just have to open their eyes and behold the manifest existence of God through his wondrous creation. Then we took a look at the wonder and the miracles of the Jewish people and their survival. Another source for belief in God. Then we talked about how individual man can connect and discover that God. Sometimes he does it through this reflection, but sometimes he needs a wake-up, stronger dose to discover God. And we discussed ways that a person can discover God in his or her life. And then we discovered, what does it mean, the Torah? The Torah is not simply a scroll that sits in the ark. The Torah is a way of living. What is the Torah? What does it do for us? How do we get involved? That was the fifth section, sources we didn't really discuss. That leads us to the second step of the pathway, and that is mitzvahs. And that's the topic today. And if you really want to get the full impact of Rabbi Wolbe's words, you'll have to read the book. Did anyone succeed in finding out if this is still available?
I searched the internet as much as I could, and
nothing.
Nothing.
Not even did the title appear?
Oh, the title appeared.
But there was nothing available.
Nothing available.
Huh.
So you have a very rare.
Very rare book indeed. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, we could try that Feldheim family connection, but thank you for trying. Okay. First of all, this is a Parsha class, we must connect with the Parsha. I think it's great, we've got a great connection to the Parsha for mitzvos. We know that the Jewish people stood at Mount Sinai for over a year, because the Parsha tells us that it was on a particular day, Vayiba Shana, this is verse 11, chapter 10, verse 11, in Parshas Behaloscha, Vayhi Bashana Hashenis, on the second year, Bachodesh Hasheni, in the second month, Be'etzrim Bachodesh, on the 20th of the month. That's when the cloud lifted, which was a sign that the Jewish people were to start traveling for the very first time since the giving of the Torah. Second year, second month, 20th of the month. That would be the 20th of Iyar. Slightly less than a year, excuse me. They got the Torah on the 6th of Sivan. They're leaving on the 20th of Iyar the following year, just a couple weeks under a full year. Famous verse, infamous verse. It says, a couple pages later, Vayisu mehar Hashem derech shloshes yamim. They journeyed from the mountain of Hashem a three-day distance. That was the first leg of their journey. And the sages tell us that had they gone straight without distraction, they would have reached Israel in days. Instead, because they various mishaps, they ended up staying for 40 years. Kind of like Rabbi and Mrs. Feldman. They came to Atlanta for a year. They stayed for 40. But, and many of us have similar experiences. But it's an infamous verse because Nachmanides reveals to us, based on the Midrash, that there was something wrong with the way the nation left. The nation, it says, they journeyed from the mountain of Hashem. Now, read to you the footnote to verse 33 and 34, 786 in the stone. The nation left Mount Sinai for the journey that should have taken it directly to Eretz Yisrael, but did not. Instead, there was a succession of three sins that impeded their progress. The first is alluded to in verse 33, where the Torah states that they left the mountain of God, on which Ramban, Nachmanides, comments, citing the Midrash, that they fled from the mountain of God like a child running away from school. Happy to leave that holy place, because they were afraid that God might give them more and more commandments. Mitzvos. That's our topic. Thus, although they traveled in compliance with God's will, they were supposed to travel, but their attitude made a sin of the journey that should have been the fulfillment of God's oath to the patriarchs. They traveled, they did the act, but they did it with a sour attitude, and that contributed to their ultimate demise in the desert.
That's in this week's Parsha too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, apparently, the faith in God, as if you will, the first step of the pathway, they were okay with. But when it came to the commandments, that already is a much more difficult yoke, and it's something that they flinched at. So, we have to discover, if we want to get back on the path, we have to check out this yoke here of mitzvos. So Revolva creates five sections in this section of the path, also five, and I will tell you what they are, and then we will discuss them one by one. The first is a covenant of life and living signs. A covenant of life and living signs. Signs. An oath is a sign. There's certain mitzvos that are distinguished by there being a sign. They don't really do anything, so so much. They don't create a certain mode of behavior within us, but they are a sign. We'll talk about what that means. The second is procedures of life. I think that's what we call halacha, or Jewish law. These are procedures for life. We live, all of humanity does certain things. We have a halacha, we have a Torah way of doing those things. We'll talk about that. We have, number three, living proximity to God. And that, he says, is none other than tefillah, prayer. And that's our puzzle. Prayer is subsumed under the category of mitzvos. Well, then what's avodah, divine worship? That's supposed to be the third part. That's our puzzle. But prayer is part of mitzvos. Number four in mitzvos is bein adam l'chaveiro, living in harmony with our fellow man. All the mitzvos between man and man. And the number five is living study. The study of Torah. These are the five subsets of mitzvos. And let me read to you what he says.
Read the last line.
The last one is called Living Study. Living Study. These are Rabbi Wolbe's titles for these five tenets. In other words, the first one, Covenant of Life and Living Signs, is what we call in Hebrew bris, covenant, or oath, a sign. Procedures of life is what we call halacha, Jewish law. Living proximity to God is what we call tefillah, or prayer. Living in harmony with our fellow man is what we call the mitzvos bein adam l'chaveiro, between man and man. And living study is what we call Talmud Torah, Torah study. And Rabbi Wolbe says, the following chapters point out the various directions in which the Torah observer must perfect himself in the performer of mitzvos. Here, the beginner will find some guidance about the order in which he or she, I won't say that every time, I'll just read it as he writes it, in which he should begin to keep the commandments. Interesting. He's giving some practical advice. If you're a beginner to mitzvos, use my organization system as a guide as to how to get into that routine of mitzvos. In other words, focus on the covenant and the signs first, then go on to halacha. Interesting. He, a leader of a generation, is giving advice for maybe a new generation of Jews who didn't have that tradition and that regularity from childhood. And then he says, why does every title that I have created here have the word living or life in it? If you noticed, covenant of life, procedures of life, living proximity to God, living in harmony with our fellow man, living study, everything is life, living. The headings of the following section include the words life or living. This is not accidental nor artificial. It predicates an elementary truth. Everything in Torah relates to real living. There are no dead ceremonies or lifeless customs. And he quotes Leviticus, "Guard my statutes and my laws, for if a man performs them, he lives in them." This is Torah. L'chaim. Okay, Torah is life. Ki hem chayenu v'orech yomenu, for they are our life and the length of our days. Before we get into the five, there's a very interesting preface. There are two prayers in our siddur that we say every morning. One, I didn't bring a siddur. I'll tell you. One prayer, which is on page 20 in the Art Scroll Siddur, says, "May it be your will, our God, shetargi leinu besorasecha, that you should make us accustomed to your Torah. V'dabkenu b'mitzvosecha, and cling to your mitzvos." The word targilenu, make us accustomed, habituate us, I think some translate. Give us a habit of performing your commandments. That's one prayer. Another prayer, which is in the blessing of Torah study, which we also do every day, and that's on page 16, there's a prayer, V'ha'arevna Hashem Elokeinu. Make, es divrei Torah schabafinu, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. So we ask God for two things. We ask God to habituate us, and we also ask God to make it sweet. And Rabbi Wolbe writes that psychologically, and in the human condition, these two concepts are very often diametrically opposed with one another. Something that a person does by habit, by rote, often lacks sweetness. There's a sense of monotony, boredom, mindlessness. Something which is new, which is not habit, is often very exciting, very sweet. If a person is constantly eating sweets, eventually, he says, they'll grow tired of it. The child that's always given treats will not perform for the sweets the way one who doesn't get sweets will. And so, how do we mesh these two? How do we have both habit and sweetness? And it's not easy, and that's why we have to pray to God. But he makes a very profound point. He says, in our nation right now, there are two camps. There are the, we call the FFBs, those who are frum from birth, those who were taught mitzvahs in their in the womb almost, and all their life, everything, keeping the mitzvahs, goes without saying, not even a thought, not even a choice. And then there are those, the BTs, the Bali Teshuvah, who came to it later in life. He says, one camp is strong in habit and weak in sweetness. The other camp is weak in habit and strong in sweetness. And both camps are fortunate. Here is a considerable, and he's writing to the returnees, so he's building them up. A satiated soul loathes even a honeycomb, but to the hungry soul, every bitter thing is sweet. Our sages interpreted a satiated soul. This is a disciple who learned from infancy. He's a satiated soul. So he loathes even the honeycomb. But the hungry soul, every bitter thing is sweet. This is a disciple who did not learn from infancy. We're talking here, Yalkut Shimoni, this is on Proverbs. This is a midrash from thousands of years ago. And they're saying that a person who did not grow up with Torah is going to consider, when they discover, is going to consider the Torah very sweet. Here is a considerable comfort to one who begins to learn and observe his mitzvahs in adulthood. He is fortunate, says Rabbi Wolbe. So count your blessings. Now, let's go into those five areas and say a little bit about each one, and then we'll leave. I already told you the puzzle, so we're out of our suspense. Regarding the first one, the covenant of life, which include the bris, the covenant, and the osos, the signs. Rabbi Wolbe says we have primarily four. We have four mitzvos, which are signs. We have, with all due respect to the women, three out of four of them do not apply to you, but that just means that you have the sign internally. The tefillin, which consists of the tefillin shel rosh and the tefillin shel yad, the tefillin on the head and the tefillin on the arm, next to the heart. We have the bris milah, circumcision, and we have Shabbos Kodesh, the holy Shabbos. We have four signs. These are all called signs. Besides mitzvot, they're also signs. These four signs relate to the four dimensions wherein man lives. Three of them are within him, and one of them he is within it. Within man, there is the mind. Man lives in four dimensions. Yeah, uh-huh. And each of the dimensions has a sign. The first three out of the four is within man, and the fourth man is within it. Within man is the mind, the emotions, and the body. And correspondingly, the tefillin on the head for the mind, the tefillin next to the heart, corresponding to the emotions, and the bris milah on the body. And then man lives within time. Man cannot live out of time. And for time, we have the sign of Shabbos. So Rabbi Wolbe is suggesting that maybe a starting point for a Jew who has already embarked on the pathway of faith and realizes that there is a Creator, and the way to connect to that Creator is through Torah. And Torah includes mitzvos. But which mitzvos? Rabbi Wolbe's suggestion, start with the signs. Because this way we connect to God. We connect to God with our minds. We connect to God with our emotions. We connect to God with our body. And we connect to God through the dimension of time. I just underlined a couple of lines to read to you. Our covenant, which primarily is the bris, is the bond between God and Jewry. The sign of the covenant is the mark in our flesh through circumcision, by which the Jewish body becomes sanctified. The feeling of sanctified life and vitality encompasses the entire man, both body and soul. Though a Jew descend to flagrant immorality, his life covenant with God persists. Even though he sins, he still remains a Jew, say our sages. Once we mark ourselves, I mean, we're all familiar with the bris, and thank God in our country, Jews do bris. All Jews, many, many Jews do the bris. Thank God. But once we have that, we are indelibly marked with God's covenant on our body, and we can do the same thing with the mitzvahs of tefillin and the mitzvah of Shabbos. If we observe these mitzvahs, there is an indelible mark on our mind, emotions, body, and our time that we are connected with Him. For in 6 days God made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day He stopped and rested. The whole week we live with the active, pulsing days of creation. God wrote of Himself that He rested, to teach us that the purpose of creation is the Shabbos. The purpose of all external activity is to reach inner perception. In closing this section, he says there are two other related signs which can also have a powerful effect on a man. The mezuzah on our doors and the tzitzis that we wear on our clothing. Okay. That is the first section of mitzvos, maybe the first dose of mitzvos that a Jew ought to consider. The next section, Mitzvos 201, is becoming familiar with the procedures of life, the halacha, Jewish law. And this already is a much more serious undertaking. To read a little bit here. Every people has national customs, manners, foods, and dress, which are deeply rooted in its character. We have these too. But our national ways are determined by God's revelation on Sinai, where we received not only the Ten Commandments, but 613. These have since become part of our national consciousness. When we mention procedures of life, we are referring to what the Torah has to say to us about birth and death, and everything in between, about food and family life. A final word on the subject. The commandments were given to refine mankind. Because many people have questions like, why is the halacha so nitpicky? Why does it matter? Why does the animal have to be slaughtered this way? Why can't I mix this and that? Why do I have to buy this kind of a lulav? Why do you say that my sukkah is invalid because it's under the tree? Who cares? What difference does it make to God whether one slaughters an animal by cutting at the front or the nape of the neck? And that's true. It doesn't make a difference to God. The mitzvos are not there for God. We're not serving Him. We're not giving Him anything. The mitzvos are there, therefore, rather for the benefit of mankind. When one keeps the commandments and knows their reasons, because that's another discussion that he has, do we really have to know the reasons? Is that part of it, to know the reason? Why do we have to do this? That's part of it. That's not the only part. The reasons can aid in refining character. You can acquire a positive quality in your nature and uproot a negative one based on the intellectual comprehension of a mitzvah. However, that's not the most powerful aspect of a mitzvah. The fundamental refining comes through the performance of the commandments themselves. We are living in a divine order. We live according to the dictates of the Creator. The God who created life designated for us an order of how to live. The commandments contribute to general well-being, but this is never their only purpose. A divine order elevates, refines, and sanctifies, and the physical body benefits too. That's why we follow halacha. We follow halacha because it is a system ordained by God, and we live in that order, and therefore we are elevated by living in His order. And then he just mentions a couple of things which would be covered in a syllabus of halacha, such as the laws of kashrut. These are not signs. These are not like the first group. These are procedures for living. How do we eat? How do we prepare food? How do we separate food? And there's a whole list of those. He mentioned family purity. There's a whole order on how a husband and a wife live together. There's periods of separation. There's periods of togetherness. The reason for these stringent regulations has been given. Rabbi Meir said, why did the Torah state that a menstruating woman must remain in her impure status for 7 days? There are some practical benefits to this system, so that her husband should not become accustomed to her or overly familiar, begin to despise her. Therefore, the Torah said, let her be impure for 7 days, so she should be as beloved to him as on her wedding day. I heard that secular marriage counselors are noticing, acknowledging the wisdom in this, and are suggesting to some of their clients to try the Jewish system. Okay. But the point is that part of living with God, with the mitzvos, after the basic signs of connection, we also have a whole system of procedures of life. Moving on to number 3, living proximity to God, tefillah, prayer. Apparently this is not avodah in the third part, this is not divine service. What is it? What is that? We'll find that out next week, God willing. But tefillah is a mainstay of Jewish life. We've learned a lot about tefillah this year, Baruch Hashem, and Rabbi Volba reviews some of those concepts, such as we're not davening because he needs a reminder. We're not even davening so that he can do what we want him to do. God doesn't need our prayers. He knows what is beneficial for us, but we need them to instill in ourselves the abiding awareness that there is no other address to turn to for success. That's why we daven. We need to drill it in time again. Every time we go out in the world, we become possessed with that mirage, that delusion that we are in control. Every time we come to pray, we come back to the realization that really success comes from God. Our motives in prayer are not to feel certain that God will fulfill our will, but to strengthen within ourselves the awareness that only God can grant success. This realization should not remain superficial. The time of prayer should be utilized to assimilate this faith within one's being. With all your heart, with all your soul, a full concentration of all of our powers, a strong will, even to the point of self-sacrifice, to draw closer to our Maker. That is the prayer which comes from the innermost recesses of the heart. Not making do and acquitting ourselves of our obligations. No. Not habit. Not rushing. Prayer is one of the most lofty forces in this world. Okay? Next step, living in harmony with our fellow man. It's axiomatic that the Torah was given, and the Ten Commandments were given in two tablets. The first tablet is man to God, the second tablet is man to man. They're both equally important. And I guess from his order, maybe a Jew has to first establish within himself a certain discipline of mitzvos between man and God. And then he will start to take that same discipline and apply it to his relationship between man and man. Because there is a secular, universal notion of humanity and humanism, but that is far from the high standards of the Torah. For example, he says, be noble, charitable, and good. Everyone understands this and concurs with it. It's not Jewish. It's universal. But does it work in real life? Is it enough, for instance, to be a member of a worthy organization, to occasionally give charity, and to participate in the yearly campaign for cancer prevention? National welfare workers professionally attend to these, yet they don't experience an inward closeness to their fellow men as a result. It's kind of like a, you know, a feather in your cap, a medal on your wall. I am charitable, I contribute. But does it really change the person? That's what the Torah's mitzvos, Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, are designed to do. And there's a number of points. One of the major principles for this is halicha bidrachav, walking in the ways of God, emulating God. The mitzvos between man and man are no less noble than man becoming godlike. That is what we're trying to reach. We have a concept of unity, which is unlike, it just does not exist in the secular world. For example, it says in the Torah, do not take revenge. If one Jew does something to you, don't retaliate. He didn't help you out, so help him out. Just the same. And the sages give an analogy. If you are hammering, I know we've mentioned this before, if you are hammering, I'm a lefty, if you are hammering a nail with your left hand, and the hammer slipped and hit your right thumb, does your right hand pick up the hammer and hit the left hand back? Of course not. It's the same person. Well, we are the same people. Unity, deriving from the source of our souls. At the root, there is only one collective Jewish soul, all of us, limbs of one organism. How do we get that through us? How do we inculcate that in our behaviors and our attitudes? Only by practicing the mitzvos Bein Adam L'Chaveiro religiously and meticulously. It's not just about keeping the Ten Commandments and not robbing banks and not killing and not robbing little old ladies. It's about a very, again, once again, halacha, following procedures for living in the area of business law, in the area of chesed, and the codes are just as prolific in the area of between man and man as they are between man and God. So that is that aspect of mitzvos. And that leads us to the final one, which is interesting because so many people reach their Judaism through Torah study, which is a wonderful thing. But for a mitzvah person, you gotta get the basics. And then when you're in the basics, then you really have to sit down and attack the mitzvah of Torah study in a more systematic way. Why do we study Torah? Obviously, we need to know the information that we're talking about. But there's much more to Torah study than just that. The goal of study is to grow into the world of Torah. We've talked about this before. One can therefore not imagine that the Torah is limited in providing practical direction in this world. Whoever has advanced a little in study knows this. It is not a collection of lifeless knowledge, rather a gigantic world in which the mind, goodness, and deed blend to achieve a truly fulfilling unity. All study of the Torah brings a person to action. It's subconscious. You study Torah, you become more conscientious Jew. It just happens. The study bound up with the doing produces in a man panimius, an inner perception of oneself and of the world. Keen sensitivity in serving God, profound observations on the meaning of the commandments, vividness in one's belief, shunning honor and glory, foregoing luxuries, and to walk humbly with your God. This inner world is the world of a Torah scholar. And that is a mitzvah for every Jew. Become a scholar. it's interesting, and I'm going to close with this. Rabbi Wolbe gives a recommended reading list for our generation. What should we study? And what order? Of course, we should go to the Parsha class with Rabbi Goldberger. That goes without saying. But what about more Torah study? So you ready for this? You writing it down? This is fascinating. Okay. In the area of texts, and this may be in order as well, get a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, a concise code of Jewish law. It's a summary of the halacha. It's actually two volumes, but you can get two volumes. It's got all the laws. There's many, many books you can get on the laws. You can get it on different topics. You can get on the laws of Shabbos. You can get on the laws of Kashrut. You can get on the laws of prayer, blessings, you name it. Okay, get a concise way to study the law. Then we got to get the hashkafa straight, the outlook, Jewish outlook. What does the world look like to a Jew? He recommends a contemporary book called The Road Back. Has anyone ever read it? Heard of it? The Road Back, Meir Schiller. That's his recommended text for Jewish outlook, Hashkafa. Then he says, the Chumash, with commentary. There's the Rashi, and there's the Ramban. Those are the two most classic commentators. And he also sings the praises of Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch from the 1800s. Why? Because Rabbi Hirsch, what was unique about him, he highlights the Torah's relevancy to modern man. Mm-hmm. Then there's the prophets and the writings, the Tanakh, with its commentaries. This is not all for one day, by the way. Then, I think for the man,
the Tanakh is the
written Torah. Right now, this is for men. He's going to have a woman's list also. But then he says a man should study the Mishnah, the six orders of the oral law. And then if a person is well-read in the concise codes, he can go back to the real codes, the Shulchan Aruch, the code of law, which there's one section on daily living, which includes most of the ritual. And then there's Choshen Mishpat, civil laws that govern Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, between man and man, such as the laws of lost and found articles, laws concerning securities and collateral, laws of theft and robbery, damages, and then a person can graduate to the big leagues of studying Talmud, Gemara. And when you enter into the study of Gemara, this is really what leads you into the world of Torah in the fullest. It's like swimming in the deep end, in the deep water. Plumbing its depth, one finds the illumination in Torah which returns one to the straight path. And then he says, let us not forget the works of Musar, spiritual development, my favorite. And guess what's on that list? Number one, Mesilas Yesharim, Path of the Just by Rabbi Lusato. The Gates of Repentance, Rabbeinu Yonah, 13th century, even older. Number three, Duties of the Heart by Rabbeinu Bachya. That's what we were studying before Shavuos. Or Yisrael, a student of Yisrael Salanter. Okay? For women, he says a half hour a day should be set aside for the study of Musar. Oh, and by the way, one who learns Musar is truly alive. The dictum that every living creature senses applies to him. He exerts himself to recognize his faults and longs to improve them. With the passage of time, as he continues to learn Musar, he will be transformed into a different man. For women, they don't have to do all of the oral law. He says they should also study the concise code of Jewish law and the Road Back by Rabbi Schiller and Torah with Rashi and Ramban and Rav Hirsch. And then he recommends Psalms, Tehillim, also with Rav Hirsch's commentary, and Ethics of the Fathers, Pirkei Avot, with a contemporary commentary, Ethics from Sinai by Irving Bunin. I'm telling you, this was written for our generation. I never looked in there. I guess I'm not a woman. And then, as far as the Tanakh, primarily Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Proverbs. Then, just to icing on the cake, to obtain a deep Jewish outlook on the world, Michtav Me'Eliyahu, Rav Dessler, and the writings of the Chafetz Chaim. For further suggestions, see note 23. All right. So, we have concluded our unit in the past, back to what we think is back to Tefillah, but Rabbi Wolbe's pathways of the Jew who is returning or entering the world of Torah. We have now concluded our second phase. The last paragraph to read, page 78. Let's read that and close on that note. When Torah is in your heart, you recognize Him and cling to Him. The topics of the Gemara are serious matters involving just laws to settle claims and disputes. But the inner content is a profound clarification of God's will in every situation, event, and question which arises in the world. God's will and His sublime holiness are shrouded behind every passage in the Talmud. When Torah is in your heart, you recognize His will and feel sublime holiness. This is not an abstract philosophical observation. You have experienced a new dimension, panemius, a luminous inner perception of self and world. The study of the Torah is the passageway from a superficial awareness of life to a life of keen discernment. This mutual influence between study and doing extends to all levels of a person's learning. As he achieves new levels of panemius, he learns to transform his speculative awareness into the active clinging to God. Let's find out next week what lies in store in Avodah, divine worship, and how that's not just prayer. Please, thank you so much for your patience, and please, questions. Yes?
Does this sort of formulaic approach to faith and connection to God really work? I mean, for people who are already connected to God, to kind of reflect on it, to give us the benefit of their analysis of what works for them is fair enough. But, you know, I find it difficult to connect with the notion that if I didn't already believe in God and somebody gave me this blueprint to success and I followed it, that voila, I would believe in God as a result of that. I don't know if we discover God or God discovers us. I feel in my life it's the latter rather than the former. And I just posed the question. I don't know. I guess it's possible if you do all the right things. I just feel that God is greater than the sum of the parts. And we pay attention to the parts, and somehow that doesn't quite add up to the sum, meaning God. That's my own feeling as a reputed scholar in the subject.
I'm wondering if the road back does not address your issue. I never looked at the book, but I think what you're saying is that, sure, this works for people who are born into it, but what about the newcomers? Can they really ever get it?
I think he's even asking the question, what about if somebody's not motivated in the first place? Are you even saying that?
I think that right. You said it better than me.
Okay, so that's the first section. As you're not going to do what we talked about today if you're not in Pathways to Faith. And that was that you missed last week. But
yes.
What it says there, man, is a section on man. And how does man get motivated? He gives three approaches. He says, either by reflection, and the problem with us in our society is that we don't spend time reflecting. You probably do. But you can get faith if you just are alone with your thoughts and you're thinking about the reality of what's around you. But he says, not everybody gets motivated that way. Another approach is when a person lives life kind of the American dream and thinks that he'll find success and happiness if he just follows the path of modern man. And when he gets to there, he realizes it ain't here. And that turns him to God. Other people find God in adversity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But each person like we said, I think we concluded in one of our last classes on faith, is that the bottom line is, it's all up to you. Nobody is going to take you by the hand and say, Arthur, now do this. That has to come. I mean, there's got to be some input on our parts. So these are great suggestions. This is a great formula or a great game plan. But, right? I mean, that's the bottom line. And you can maybe get inspired on how people have come to this and have succeeded in their path that haven't been born into it. And maybe that's what that book will inspire. But ultimately, it's up to me. I'm wondering what's... Penny, for your thoughts.
Well, I don't know. It's kind of hard to share my thoughts with everybody. It's like more like a one-on-one.
Okay. I don't mean to put you on the spot. I wanted to invite if you had any thoughts you wanted to share with us.
I have a lot of questions.
This is a safe place, by the way. We periodically do silly to say things that aren't 100% right, and everybody...
Yeah, and you see all these empty chairs in the room?
Except for Arthur.
These are the people that we had to send out. They were out of line.
Anyway,
good job,
everybody.
Good job, Arthur.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.